That's all right. I'm going to get started. Thank you so much for coming to this panel. I know a lot of us are really excited to talk about all the steps of becoming an early career journalist. I would love to just, you know, introduce our panelists. We have next to me my self-spotted elk, who is a freelancer and has worked for High Country News and for These Times and a lot of other
places.
Lots of places, exactly. We have Hallie Parker, who is at WWIO, and we have Eva Tesfai, who is at KCUR, the Mississippi River Basin Water and Ag Desk, and Harvest Public Media. I just want to start off asking, you know, everyone, like, how did you get into climate journalism? Can you give a brief overview of that? That'd be great.
Hi, okay, so I'll put it this way. I mainly like to focus on how national politics or issues affect Indian country and vice versa as well. And so, I definitely want to underscore that, you know, environmental issues and tribal issues shouldn't be sort of viewed as interchangeable, but they overlap, and there's a lot of, power dynamics and a lot of actors and, you know, over stuff like resources. Notably in Alaska right now, but, you know, for, you know, regarding treaties and, like, historical legacies regarding, like, environmental issues in the United States, I tend to mainly focus on that. And so I didn't go to treaty school or anything like that, but I did have the privilege to have a bunch of opportunities and a bunch of internships. And so I also, I went with High Country News, and so they, you know, gave me the trust and confidence to, you know, report on a myriad of environmental issues affecting Indian country. I think one thing that's, you know, important to also, like, you know, recognize of, like, what is climate journalism and what is it, like, environmental journalism? I think it's, like, a really good, like, discussion to have with, like, the newsroom that you're interviewing with as well, to have a better sense of, like, exactly what do they define climate or environmental journalism. And so I definitely think that, as a reporter, I do cover a lot of environmental issues, but I have to distinguish that, like, well, I also cover Indian country.
All right. I don't know. I always think that it's funny because I, like, hated science growing up, and yet here I am. Actually, when I first got out of college, I started at this little paper. I'm from Virginia originally, but now I'm working in New Orleans. I started a little paper on the border of North Carolina and Virginia and covered this really gigantic rural county, and a lot of the issues happening there were around agriculture. And so that was actually my entry point into getting into the environmental world. I had already been super interested in, like, social justice issues. I was dreaming of being, like, a foreign correspondent going overseas covering human rights. But then I really started to recognize just, like, the intersection between social justice and the environment, being able to talk to different farmers about the issues they were going through, how they were starting to recognize that the extremes and the unpredictability of the weather at that point was really messing up their operation. Even if they didn't call it climate change or wanting to recognize it as climate change, I was just like, this, I don't know. I just have to admit that I hadn't fully thought about it before, the big issue of climate change, and that's when it started to hit me, like, hey, this is going to be something that's affecting us for a long time. This will be a really big issue to cover as a journalist. So I decided to get into environmental journalism from there, especially since, like, as an early career journalist, I wanted to move from being a general assignment reporter to having more of a lead. So when I was looking to switch newsrooms, I started looking for environment reporter jobs. jobs, and that landed me in Louisiana, where there is no shortage of environmental issues. We have coastal land laws down there. We have a ton of environmental pollution and industrial pollution. So managed to find a job down there. And I was able to find a place too where I could start getting into more environmental justice issues. And that's kind of where I've taken my career now, is just focusing more on that segment of environmental and environmental coverage.
So I also wasn't a big huge fan of science growing up, but I did really love biology and ecology, and I grew up in South Africa, so there's no shortage of that. Conservation is huge and pretty much anywhere you go in Africa. And then also climate change was something we learned a lot about growing up. It was because unfortunately, like the countries I grew up in are kind of on the front lines of the climate crisis. But I was an English major in college. I didn't know that I was going to go into journalism, but I graduated in 2020. It's the pandemic, so I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I didn't want a real job yet. So I applied to a bunch of fellowships, and I ended up getting the Crop Fellowship at NPR, RIP, not doing it this year, but that was a really good way to get into journalism and try out a bunch of different beats, try out a bunch of different roles in public radio. And I ended up at the Gulf States Newsroom. And I was there when Hurricane Ida hit. And even though I was in Birmingham, I wasn't in Louisiana, I helped a little bit with that coverage. And I decided that I really liked that. And I really liked doing local journalism. I felt like I was providing a service that was for the people who were being affected, not about them. So after that, I ended up getting a temp producing job at NPR's science podcast, Shortwave. And I thought, obviously, Shortwave isn't only environmental, we cover physics, math, but that was when I really started getting into science communication, and I really liked doing the environmental stories. So that's how I ended up applying to Harvest Public Media, and now I didn't know that I was going to cover ag, but ag and climate change are very closely intertwined. Ag emissions contribute to climate change, but then also farmers are feeling the effects of climate change first. So that's kind of where my work really intersects with climate journalism.
Thank you for that. Speaking of getting into the newsroom, what are your best tips to, enter a newsroom? Is it like an internship or trying to freelance? How's that process been for all of you?
In my experience, I think interning was probably the best ability to not only have developed mentorship opportunities where they can then, be like, oh, well, there's this, great, desk, or there's this great publication, and they're looking for, unfortunately, obviously, it's probably obvious, but, journalism definitely has a huge, do I trust this person to recommend? And that's like a very easy way to sort of get into a newsroom. And so I think interning, not only gives you, helps you build your portfolio, like helps you, understand more of like how newsroom like practice and operations dynamic works, where, editors at other places, looking to fill a certain position, can have a sense of like, okay, they're familiar with this, I'll probably give them a shot or something like that. And so I definitely think that interning is probably the best way. And I think also not discounting freelancing, of course, I just think it is a doable and feasible, entryway into journalism. It is just a much more difficult learning curve that I feel like if I didn't have the big preparation, if I didn't have like an understanding of like editor journalist relationships, I probably would have struggled. And I'm not saying I don't struggle while as like freelancing. And I'm also currently like interning as well as at Indie Science Magazine too, while balancing like a Career Plus fellowship. And so I definitely think that you know, getting the tools and getting the support and the necessary resources helps set up the best way to, you know, get yourself into a newsroom.
Yeah, totally agree with interning, especially, I mean, as a student too. I know for me, I feel like I've gotten into each newsroom I've been in at this point in different ways. I think being able to have a strong resume, of course, and being able to start publishing as early as possible is helpful so that you have clips and stuff to show. But let's see, I've been a journalist professionally full-time for about 4 years now, and I've been in four different newsrooms at this point, too. And I think for each of those, some of those has been like through the standard process of, you know, going on Indeed and like sending your resume and trying to have a really good cover letter in the interview. But I've noticed too, like once you just start doing good work, people start to take notice of that. And especially with the job that I'm in now, like they just came to me while I was in my other job and like asked me like, hey, we have this job that's open and available. Would you want to apply? So I'd say, like, I don't want to say networking. Me and Siri were talking about this on the bus the other day on our tour, because I really just hate the term networking. It makes it sound like such a transactional experience. But I think doing that kind of relationship building with other journalists is really important. And also, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter. Of course, I'm sure a lot of us are turning into more of a hate relationship lately, but being able to put your work out there and create your brand is also so helpful. To really just be able to have newsrooms reach out to you instead. And I love that because I hate cover letters. So the less work that you have to do to find a job that you enjoy, the better. So that's kind of my tip on that.
So I guess I'll just like say like fellowships are also pretty good, and internships. A lot of people ask me how to get an NPR internship or how to get an NPR prop fellow. I could not get an NPR internship to save my life. I don't. They're so hard to get. So I feel like my advice there is like just look at, if you are interested in public radio, like look at the public radio stations in your area. Because like often they also have a lot of fellowships or internships that are really good. Some of them even pay better, and you get to do more a lot of the time. They'll actually like have you like go basically be their GA reporter or something like that. So, and then this is my soapbox, like really like vet your newsrooms as you're applying for jobs. RFA is also, Report for America, which is how I got this job, is also a good way to get like apply to a lot of jobs at once. But I think even with that, like you should really like do your research about the newsrooms. I would say that's kind of why making connections, I was gonna say networking, but we don't like that term here.
the term.
<Yeah. laughs> like that's why like making like connections is really important, because you can like ask people like, do you know anybody who works here or worked here, and get, and it's helped me avoid some really bad toxic newsrooms. So and then also when you're in the interview them, I always ask the DEIB question. I'm like, what are you guys doing for DEIB, and in terms of like the newsroom itself, but also what are you guys doing like to make sure that you're covering like marginalized communities well, and again, like for them, not about them, and stuff like that. And if they don't have good answers, maybe I'll try to find out a little bit more, but I take note of that. So I think that's the other really important thing is, you know, sometimes you do have to take a job just because you need a job, like, but it's, I think it's also important to know what you're getting into if that's the case.
What's DEI?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion, and belonging. So, like, basically, what are they doing to, like, make it not, like, a toxic newsroom?
I defined it as
a B. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. I also haven't heard the B. At first, it's DEIJ, so the J is justice.
Oh, yeah. There's just a lot of different acronyms, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of different acronyms. Speaking of cover letters, how can, early career journalists, young journalists, kind of approach the job process, which often includes, like, you know, hours of writing cover letters and tailoring, you know, different resumes to different jobs? Like, how can they approach that kind of very daunting process of applying to these internships, applying to the fellowships, and eventually kind of applying to jobs?
I think sort of just, like, you know, briefly circling back to, you know, building like your network and building these relationships, especially with peers, is a great way to also, I think, have a better understanding of, you know, because it's like, it's, you know, applying for jobs in journalism is, you know, is not an easy lift. And I think having someone be like, oh, okay, I think they remember that they were working at this one place, I think just, you know, shooting them a DM or an email, being like, hey, what was it? Like, it makes the whole process, like, where it's like, it's not worth the time, because, you know, our, you know, time, you know, everyone's time is more invaluable, and, you know, you have to write the cover letter, you have to do all these things, and sometimes at places you have to take editorial tests, and, you know, instead of, you know, and then ending up in a newsroom that is just not compatible with you, I think we'll probably get into this sooner, but I think also vetting newsrooms and vetting organizations is like if you need a job, probably, you know, go ahead and apply, but I think, like, would you potentially get this job, get the role, and have just a really complicated relationship with, like, your newsroom, is something I would definitely, you know, look out for first, of, like, culture, what's sort of their approach, you know, looking at their coverage of, like, environmental journalism, climate journalism, and having leading more insights of, like, the places you're applying for. And it's like, you know, when there is, like, your dream job, you know, definitely, I think it really helps having someone, literally anyone, that you think you can, like, basically, like, not get you in, but being like, hey, could you, you know, if, and I see this practice sort of going away, which I think is kind of a good thing, which is that, like, in job applications, like, referrals, like, that is something that's a very, I think, slightly, like, it definitely has people who get, like, referrals definitely have the leverage, which is just, like, really, you know, I think is an outdated practice that's, you know, thankfully fading away, but I think really while you're doing your newsletter, which I, you know, have a bunch of thoughts on, but mainly I think being consistent with the cover letter parts portion is that I like to just really think of, like, you know, having sort of a brief, well, yeah, because it's like they want to know if you can write, basically, but also they want to know, like, exactly how will you align with, like, your approach to reporting, your approach to, like, values. If it's an outlet or publication that only focuses, like, likes to have people that focus on, like, environmental justice or what's that, solutions reporting, then, you know, definitely note that. And having, they want to know if you understand, like, the newsroom and if your skills can align with that. And so it's, like, I think that really makes it or simplifies cover letter writing, because you have to write so many cover letters and it is exhausting. But I think having, you know, a skeleton of what you're going to write, and then taking that this template to different you know, jobs and roles, makes it a little bit easier. Yeah, I think that's probably it.
I feel like you just covered so much. And I don't know. I know that we've all talked about this at this point now, but I just really want to stress the point about newsrooms, just because, I don't know if you guys have horror stories or disappointing experiences, but that's what it took for me to really start interviewing the people who were interviewing me. Just because I had, not great experiences with my editor, I didn't feel like I was allowed to do the coverage that I was really hoping to do, that I felt like I would have had a platform for. And so you really need to do an inventory of yourself and figure out what your values are in order to know what you're going to be looking for in whatever newsroom you're looking into. And like you're saying, you might need to take a job with someplace that doesn't align at first, but at least if you know, then you're going to be able to, like, your search for a newsroom while you're in that newsroom is going to be a lot easier. Because you know what you're looking for. You know, if you're in the interview, you know if there's the vibe is right or something. So I just really want to emphasize that.
I think also finding like the perfect newsroom is just going to be a Sisyphean task that will never feel like it's going to be fulfilled, because there isn't a perfect newsroom. You'll always, we're up here, saying that like, oh, well, it's culture, some like, weave or whatever, or, in my case. I think that having there's going to be some stuff where it's like, oh, their, mission statement or the way that they, cover things, like, seems, exactly out my alley, exactly what I think I'm going, I think I'll probably, thrive here. But it's like, when you get there, it's like, oh, like, yeah, the reason why they're doing really good reporting is because it's like a very demanding, very quick turnaround type of environment where you might not exactly find that to be a best fit, or that no one's not doing anything, like what's going on, and being, kept in the dark. And so it's like, but you still have like an ability to do stories you want. So it's like you, I think that it's valuable to, find, what probably would be the best, like, fit, or like the bestest fit. But I think of what you want to see yourself, and, if it's environmental, you can definitely go for it, since it's obviously so competitive. But I think having an understanding that I think you can afford to be pretty, like, picky, but also you can't expect that it will be for the perfect the first time. I think that people who love and work in their newsrooms for years, with some, like, my editors and colleagues, there is always something that seems to always be persistent, in regarding any, like, criticism and feeling like, hey, this is probably not exactly, like, we should bring this up, or, like, we should address this. But, yeah, wanted to include that.
One thing that helped me when I was trying to pick jobs to apply for and, like, which ones I wanted is I basically just, like, made a list of all the things I wanted in a newsroom and saw, like, checked off to see how many the newsroom filled.
Thank you so much for that. Also, just a tip for cover letters, NPR has kind of a satirical cover letter template, all the things basically not to do, and I found that it's a really great resource for students, especially if you've never written one. And so, yeah, we've kind of covered, like, interviewing the job, so, you kind of talking to people, what are people who are going out to these jobs, like, what do they need to do to prepare on the other side, too, for, the questions that the interviewer is going to ask them?
I wrote down things that people ask me. So, definitely, read off a bunch of their articles, like, research. One thing that people ask me, it's a question I hate, but often newsrooms ask you this, is, like, they ask you to, like, critique some of their articles. So it's good to be prepared to do that. It's a hard thing to do because, like, you don't want to, like, tear them down, but you also don't want to like have not good criticism. So it's just like, that's one that like you should really prepare for, because it's a hard question to answer on the spot. And I mean, the other thing is always come with pitches. And then come with like the questions that you want to know about the newsroom.
I think those are my three main things.
And be ready to like gas yourself up a little bit, talk about the work that you've done and some of your best stories.
Kind of in that same vein of what I was talking about earlier, really making sure you have done this kind of value inventory for yourself, because what's most important when you're being interviewed is actually being honest. Obviously, you're also making yourself look really good, and you don't want to offend whoever is interviewing you, but you also want to make sure this is a really good fit. And make sure that they know what they're expecting from you too. So I would say make sure you're being honest during that. And I also really love what you were talking about in terms of like great pitches too. And I think that when we were all talking before this panel, we're kind of like, do we bring a pitch that we are worried about them stealing? Is there a fear there? I know that that's never personally happened to me, but I do think like bringing a pitch about something that you're really excited about or that you've seen is missing from their coverage is super helpful and a great way to, you know, impress whoever it's going to be.
I agree. I think bringing pitches, almost every interview I had, they asked like, you know, what would be good, you know, stories, or what do you think we should add to our coverage, which is basically like, you know, what's a story, what's a pitch you have. I think pitches are also a way of like having them, having the newsroom recognize that they want to know if like, have you been reading our stuff? Like, you know what we're, you know, bringing a, you know, a certain pitch, you know, that's more rooted in, you know, that's like more of like a critical based piece to a place where it's like, you know, we're more generalized, we're more like, we want to reach a wider audience, and this might be too specific. I think you have, like, demonstrating that you have read their work and that you're also not afraid to, like, share perspectives and, like, share, like, a very interesting way or angle of a story is like also it's an opportunity for you to stand out and really kind of like have your, you know, report, like finding good stories and making good stories is a great way to have pitches demonstrate that. I think also I was going to say something.
I was just also thinking about how a good job interview is just like a good interview for a story. Like, it's going to be a really great back and forth conversation. You want it to feel comfortable. So that's all I was going to say. Like, you really just want to think about this interview not as like something that's torturous or scary, but as a human talking to a human. Let's just have a chat.
I think also it's a, like we mentioned, that it's a great, like, it's also striking a balance between, like, you know, being honest and, you know, being a little bit more critical, and, like, I think also it's, like, an opportunity to show that you're not, it's, you have a way of thinking and approaching things that isn't so narrow, and so being able to be comfortable with like generating like, you know, meaningful criticism or something that's like, whether this be about the newsroom or just like about the industry itself, I think that they really are pretty receptive to that. If they, you know, are uncomfortable, then maybe that's a sign of like, oh, maybe is this newsroom exactly what it's portraying itself to be, or, you know, or it's not going to be a fit. I'm trying to like figure out what was I going to say. I think I basically, you know, with interviewing with people, it's also striking a balance between, like, you know, being able to be critical, being able to give feedback. I think it's also, like, I don't think you can afford to be really humble in interviews, like, because they want to know, can you do the job? Like, and, you know, definitely there's a balance between, like, thinking you're going to get a Pulitzer within a year in a newsroom, and also being like, hey, like, I know I'm pretty comfortable with myself in doing this work, and I think we can get into later of, like, navigating the newsroom, which is that, like, also being kind of assertive, being like, and I'm also comfortable with setting boundaries as well. Like, you know, don't say that in the interview quite yet, but I think having a sense of being confident with yourself and assertive that, you know, you're fit for the job, you know, this is, I qualify for it, and I think I'm the best person to be in this position.
CV, is this where we should also talk about pay and benefits?
Basically, you know, once you get past the interview, then you're you know, in the salary negotiating phase. You can also negotiate other things, which I think maybe people don't know, which is, you know, where you work, if the position is going to be remote or not. Sometimes certain places will say, oh, you have to come in person. But the negotiation kind of stage, like, that's where everyone kind of lays all their cards on the table. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
I guess since I'm second semester. I just know that when I, you know, first started out and was interviewing for my very first job, I didn't even feel comfortable asking about money or, like, what was available to pay, or even going to the other side of things and talking about, like, vacation time. And my first job in that little newspaper near North Carolina paid $25,000, and I think I had 2 weeks vacation time, and I think that 2 weeks vacation time has been pretty consistent, like, throughout as, like, what's offered. But I started realizing that that's really not a lot of time. It's not enough for a whole year. And so, especially in this newsroom I'm in now, I made sure when I was, like, talking to, you know, the hiring folks, I was like, is it going to be possible for me to get 3 weeks? And even that started before, in the newspaper I worked in before my current public radio station, they didn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of salary, because I asked about that, but they did have some flexibility with PTO. So I made sure to see, hey, can I get 3 weeks? And they were like, yeah, no problem. So it's actually not that scary to ask for the things that you want, and you may could just say no, but at least you put it out there and you've made, you know, your desires clear.
Yeah, I think I haven't really, honestly, I always ask, but I haven't had much luck getting better salaries or getting vacation time. I don't know if that's, I suspect that working public radio, often you have to work for universities, and they're a lot stricter. One thing maybe to consider when you're vetting your newsroom is, like, seeing whether that newsroom has a union, because unions can really help with salary issues.
Yes, I'm not in a union right now,
but it was nice when I was in one.
I'm in a union right now, even as a fellow, which is really cool. And so, you know, once you get into the newsroom, like, how should you spend your first month there? Like, what are the things that are really kind of crucial to set the stage for, like, a successful internship or a fellowship? How should, you know, young journalists spend that time in the early career?
Yeah, I think that this is probably, like, a, you know, I would view it as less daunting and more of, like, an exciting opportunity to get to know your colleagues, get to know the flow and culture of your newsroom, and, you know, be open and, like, curious and, like, available to really have, you know, you know, good discussions with your colleagues and also getting to know and building your sources, I think is just a really important way to have a very good foundation and understanding your desks or your newsrooms, like history, like really helps find some footing and like being able to finally, you know, eventually, you know, balance out things and have a good, consistent, you know, pace and workflow that works best for you, and you, between you and the editor, but like also primarily what works for best for you in your newsroom. I think that there's also, you know, regarding starting out, you know, being the new person in a newsroom, and especially if this is your first big job or even your first, you know, salaried or, you know, benefit job role, I think it's important to, I think this is more of a generational thing that I've noticed, but I think it's still pretty stubborn in this industry, which is paying your dues. And I think that is something that's dissipating, because in, you know, newsrooms I've been in, and even maybe in freelancing, if that is applicable to you, I think it's something that is dying out. And I wouldn't expect this to be, if you get your job, something that's going to occur, but it's something that is prevalent, which is the idea that, you know, if you work as a general assignment reporter or breaking news, then it's like, it's the norm to be overpaid or work, underpaid, I wish, underpaid, overworked, because it's like, well, if you don't do it, then how are you going to, you know, legitimize yourself? And that's, you know, if you're not doing this, and, you know, and I think people like to just pass down, and it's like, no, that's, you're just, you are a reporter just as this reporter who's been in a newsroom for quite a while. And I think that, I think a much more healthier, productive, effective way of finding footing in the industry is to have, you know, a newsroom that focuses on collaboration, you know, initiatives where you can take like leadership like steps, projects and mentorship opportunities. But I think paying your dues is something that I hope it doesn't, you don't come across, but I think it's something to be aware of, but also I think reject, because we're basically the new generation of journalists.
I think if you can, like, maybe take, if your newsroom allows you to, you could take maybe the first, like, week or the first few days to just kind of, like, if you're moving, like, get to know the place you're living in, get to know, start building your sources, just having background calls with people. One thing that was helpful for me when I was, like, a crop fellow is sometimes I would just ask other senior reporters, like, is there stuff that, like, you don't have time to do with that, like, stories that you don't have time to do that, I can pick up. So that's like a good way to kind of start getting into things. And yeah, just like start meeting your colleagues and making those connections.
Yeah, and I love that tip about asking your advice. I haven't even thought about that. I want to do that now. I think one thing that we talked about was just making sure that you're being really kind to yourself and recognizing like you're still getting used to the job, you're getting used to the position. This might even be your first time, your first like full-time journalism gig. And I know that when I had my very first correction, I was very terrified. I was like, am I going to get fired for misspelling this person's name? You should always double check on people's name and how you spelled it in the article. But you know, it's not doomsday. You're not going to get fired immediately if you make a mistake. And so you just have to be able to forgive yourself and like keep rolling and just learn as you go. Like,
corrections are gonna happen.
Yeah, definitely correct. Corrections are totally gonna happen. Would also emphasize to be open and honest with your editor and tell them right away about any issues.
Just wanted to know about editors, which is that I think that it can be a good litmus, a reliable litmus test on the culture, like cultural makeup of your newsroom. And I think that having, you know, I think setting boundaries and then learning to have, like, what's the best way to communicate with each other, and having like a conversation pretty much, you know, it doesn't need to be an explicit, but it, you know, it does, if they're open to that kind of conversation, you know, that's, you know, fine. But like, there's so many different types of editors, and I was very lucky to have an editor who, you know, not only, you know, suggested, you know, maybe refile this piece, which sounds horrifying, but I was very, like, I was just very happy and lucky to have someone be like, you know, I think you can push yourself harder. I think you can actually do a really good job on this. And so I, you know, rewrote it, and, you know, they were helpful in not only, you know, not holding my hand, but like being like, hey, I think this is a great place to start. And I think those are really good editors. And we're also mindful of your ability to do the job. And I think the most important thing, like, of a good editor, reporter, you know, journalist relationship is trust. If you have, like, a tenuous trust, like, from the editor, then I think that can generate a lot of problems than it should be. I think having sort of a finding, and it, you know, editor, and sometimes the editors are just really busy and it kind of sucks, but, you know, finding a good way to communicate with your editor, finding a way to work with your editor will save a lot of, like, stress down the line. And I think that, I think it's also important to, like, it sometimes within particular dynamics and relationships, editor, it can seem like the editor, like, you're working for the editor, but I think the biggest thing to underscore is that you're working for the people, not your editors. I think that's pretty valuable.
Another common question in interviews is, what kind of style of editing do you like? But you can also ask that question back, what's your style of editing? So.
I think, unfortunately, I'm going to have to end here for our moderator questions. We had another section about navigating the newsroom as a journalist of color, but if you have any questions about that, you can ask them now or definitely later. I would love to open it up to any questions.
Hi, I'm Melina Khan. I'm a student at Quinnipiac University.
Oh, wait, sorry. I didn't do the moderator policy. Okay, so SAJ's Q&A policy says that askers must identify themselves with their name and affiliation, and please no speeches.
So a lot of jobs will have a round of, like, a video interview, you know, where you're just answering questions on screen. Do you have any tips about how that kind of stand out, or how to make that a little bit less awkward when it's a little bit impersonal?
I did all my interviews over Zoom. Like I said, I started my career in the pandemic. I think it's, again, about, like, preparing as much as you can, being confident. They really like when you're, like, personable and you, I mean, joke with them. And, like Holly said earlier, that, like, it's a two-way conversation rather than just, like, them asking a question. Sometimes I've definitely gotten, like, I asked them to clarify one newsroom to clarify a question, and then they were like, please save your questions to the end. So you have to, like, ask them questions back as you're talking. But I think, like, a good, when the interview goes well, someone once told me that, like, an interview went well when they, like, talked a lot as well. It's just, I think, trying to, like Holly said, make it kind of like a two-way conversation.
Sorry, just to clarify your question, are you talking about a Zoom interview, or are you talking about recorded questions?
Yeah, we're asking about recorded questions.
Okay. I'm sorry, I have no experience
with that. I actually have some experience with that. I think what helped for me, I didn't get the role, but I got a second interview after the video portion, they canceled the role. This was for a 2020 internship. And so I think something that helps is like not to kind of pretend like you're talking to a person. I don't fully know, you know, how those video interviews are screened, but I know that they are screened by the hiring manager. So I think, you know, trying to, again, gas yourself up, like hype yourself up, really try to understand what they're asking, because you have like time between when you know what the question is and then when you have to, like there is a timer, but there's, you know, a little bit of time to prepare. And then I also think, you know, being personable, being comfortable, right? Like sitting somewhere where you feel comfortable, you might be wearing, you know, more professional attire than you would, but, and also just like being passionate. Like passion is something that, you know, people can see even if it's a recorded video. They can see it even if it's, you know, over Zoom. And so I think thinking about things that you're passionate about really can help overcome this kind of digital divide where it's like you're not even seeing the faces of the people who are interviewing you yet. Yeah. Any other questions?
I have two. My name is Hima Castillo, and I'm with NPR. My first question is, as like a younger journalist on your team, navigating a topic like climate, environment, ag that are very technical, complex, and also have a lot of history behind them, other than good sourcing and research, how do you navigate covering these topics without being swindled by sources that know that you're young, while also maybe not having coworkers that cover the exact same thing as you, that you can like lean on to bounce ideas off of?
That's a great question.
That is so, I don't know. I guess I'll try. That is such a good question, I know that you said beyond having sources, but I really feel like that is what I do, is like I have go-to people that I feel comfortable calling up and saying like, hey, I have a question about this, do you mind just talking with me about it? Even if it's not like a formal interview or something like that. And I also, we didn't really talk about this, I don't think, but mentorship is really helpful. And like that could be one of those people that you call up, if not, you know, a researcher that you have a good relationship or something like that. I think too, I don't know, this might also be like kind of outside of the realm of what you're talking about, like a bit coming up in like a daily situation where you're trying to cover something, but I found fellowships to be really helpful to like enhance my own understanding of these complex topics, especially since I didn't care about science growing up, so didn't have that background already. But being able to do like different fellowships or different trainings has been really helpful to be able to sort out the bullshit from what's real and what's accurate.
Yeah, I feel like a common saying people say is like trust but verify, and I think that is true. I think, yeah, I also think talking things out with your editor and just being really vigilant. Like if something doesn't sound right, like trust your instincts, I think is and yeah, even if it does sound right, like definitely verify. And I just learned about some fellowships that can help you. Like I guess for me, like what's really important is like understanding like scientific studies and being able to like understand whether studies are bad or good. So I'm hoping to take a training on that soon, but I think that might be a skill to also develop.
Yeah, I think also for my case, I had somewhat of like a similar situation, which is like, how can I cover this very niche thing about Indian country? And, you know, while acknowledging new ones, but also because like this is something that's, you know, it's rarely covered, and you don't see it. So I think for me, I think learning in general, just not being afraid of like DMing a journalist who covers like a beat or area that is something you're interested in, because most of the time they're like, okay, what's up? I think that you know, Slack channels. There's like a JOC side channel. There's like one if you're interested in data journalism called News Nerdery. There's like, and then there's one, I can't remember what it's called, but there's an Upper channel. There's, you know, several places where you can safely ask these like questions and, you know, be like, hey, I literally have no idea where to start or where do I even begin learning about this. I think it also helps as well. And having like an online venue to be able to safely share some story ideas without the fear of like someone taking it or something like that. But I think that also, I think, you know, reading, you know, coverage that is somewhat in that area, or the primacy if you're like a folk, like if you're interested, I think becoming the expert is like kind of a daunting theme, but I think that over the years, you know, reading and talking to sources, most of the time people are like actually very friendly, especially in academia. Like they want to, you know, share their insights and share your research and have like a conversation, especially in your, you know, position as a journalist. I think that's learning as much as you can is sort of a responsibility you have.
I would also say Sideline is a great resource if you're unsure about a topic. It's a service that connects journalists to scientists, and also rephrasing something when you're talking to a scientist. So saying, you know, oh, my understanding of what you just said is this. And then, you know, maybe they'll say yes, maybe they'll say, oh, you know, that's not quite right. Actually, this is what I meant. And that works for all types of sources. It's like sort of, you know, repeating what they said back to them, and it helps them to stay present too. Any other questions?
I had a second one, if that's okay.
Sure.
So I feel like journalism, for being like accessible or like an everyman like role, is extremely elitist in terms of like there are top J schools and Ivy schools that like directly will pipeline you into places like the Times, NPR, WAPO, bigger outlets, top 10 broadcast markets. I didn't go to any of those. I actually went here to Boise State, not a G school at all, not a major media market at all. So it's kind of like my chip on my shoulder. So I guess like for other people in the room that didn't go to J schools, don't go to top 10 programs or Ivies, like what advice would you have for, you know, still being able to sell yourself in a newsroom compared to someone that went to Columbia, Northwestern, Mizzou? The lineup of schools are known for training good journalists.
Yes, I went to a small school called Longwood University that no one has ever heard of. It's literally in a rural town called Farmville, like the Facebook game. So I understand your chip on your shoulder. I mean, I really feel like your work speaks for itself. And so, I mean, I spent a lot of time in college, like, working for my student newspaper, which was smaller. Like, I'm so surprised to hear people from, like, the University of Georgia who had, like, a staff of 100 people. And I'm like, oh, we had, like, 25. And you get paid? Wow. but I think it's just about putting in the work while you're in school, or just, like, if you're not going, if you're, like, deciding later to become a journalist, like, just making sure that you have those clips available, because I think that's the work that speaks for itself, and that's what editors are looking for. They just want you to be a great writer and have passion for being a reporter, in my experience, and so I think that's also why it's so important when you're talking about those. Oh, why it's so important when you're talking about those video recorded interviews, like that's any interview, just making sure that that passion comes through for the craft, because that resonates with all journalists.
Any other questions? I think you had your hand up for a while.
So I was going to ask about, you know, kind of this idea of taking jobs because you need a job. Oh, by the way, I'm Katie Langley. I'm also a student from Columbia University. So, you know, obviously I'm still in college, and a lot of what's offered to journalism students are under internships. And I'm curious about how much you value being paid for your work versus how much you value
getting clips and getting experience, because I know, like you guys are talking about, it's kind of accepted in this industry that you're going to work on a paid internship.
I mean, I couldn't afford to work in a paid internship. Like, so all of my internships were paid, and if I freelance, like, I would get paid for the work that I did. So I don't know. Have you guys done unpaid internships?
Yeah. I think I would probably share a perspective and experience of working on paid internships. And so I worked in a newsroom where it was unpaid, but they gave me, training to, how to do audio editing. They gave me this is how you, do newsroom, how you can, work in a newsroom, become familiar with a newsroom. And I think that I definitely did have a better sense of but adequate and an understanding of the dynamics between how can you work with an editor, and then of course I learned some skills. I just think that with an increase and aware of precarity in the country, I think that you can't really afford it. I think that I just don't think unpaid internships should be, and I think it's not really a norm anymore. I'm not sure what it's like right now, but I think that even though I was pretty grateful I took an unpaid internship because, they were very nice and, still I, tune in and listen to their coverage, I think over time, I think that I don't really recommend unpaid internships, and I just don't think it's something. I think it also affirms a value that people will work unpaid because we're giving them experience, we're giving them an opportunity to write clips and stuff like that. And that's not to say sure that's helpful, but I think that your student newspaper clips are just as fine. They just want to know that can you report a story, can you have good stories. I think that unpaid internships should not be accepted anymore, and I think it really needs to just probably go away. So long story short, I don't think pursue unpaid internships. And I know that's very hard because it's just such a competitive industry, but I think the more we go towards and demanding we get paid for our work, our labor, that will go for way longer than getting two or three clips, which you could easily go freelance at an all weekly or your student newspaper.
Good answers. Any more questions? Please identify yourself.
Hi. Thank you first of all for coming here today. I'm Ashley Zott. I'm a student at Michigan State University. I want to ask you all, although you're very early in your careers and still going your way up in this room, how do you deal with burnout? Kind of ups and downs in this room. I know even though we're students, I'm working in students, where you feel that a lot. And so how do you do that as a full-time job working with students?
I went to the trauma-informed journalism thing yesterday, so if you guys haven't seen that, I would recommend watching it because it really was good. The psychologist there really explained how burnout happens and stuff like that. I think we talked a little bit about this earlier, but it's important to be kind to yourself when you make mistakes and stuff like that. And I think that also goes for when you're really overworked. I think it's really important to learn how to advocate for yourself in the newsroom and just kind of put your foot down with your editor, whether your boss is, when you need to. And obviously that's easier said than done. It depends on the newsroom you're in. But the more you can develop that skill of advocating for yourself and being firm but not in a way that they won't perceive you as causing problems. Obviously, we haven't gotten to journalists of color, but that's something that is especially hard to do as a journalist of color. People may think you're aggressive, may think you're lazy, but then maybe it's also not the newsroom for you, I also try to, every newsroom and I get involved in DEI work, and my current newsroom has we just started a mental health committee, and even stuff I learned here at this conference, I'm going to bring back and try to get us to start doing some of these things of like maybe letting people who really like did some really traumatic reporting, like this week I work in Kansas City, Ralph Yarl was shot. So I think also the more you can like band together with like your coworkers and demand like better like, you know, time off or better, just like more consideration of your mental health, then that can also help. And I like advocating for yourself, but also advocating for each other.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I haven't like really nailed this down yet, because I feel like we're talking about journalists are so passionate about what they do. I really love covering communities who are unrepresented and are dealing with pollution. And so a lot of times they like invite me to their events, and I really want to go because I think it's important to like show up for the communities, even if not necessarily covering them, like covering that event specifically. And so you have to be able to find a work-life balance, and that's the thing that I'm still working on. But my editors are really, fortunately, I have really nice editors, and they're working with me on that. And like, really, like one of the things that they've said that really resonate with me is that I've always felt like, you know, as a journalist, there's like this weight on our shoulders to try to change the world with our reporting. And we totally can, but it's also going to be very hard to do that. It might take a lot of time for whatever story that would do that. Like, you probably won't do that with like each daily story that you do. And just kind of recognizing that in your mind and forgiving yourself for not like covering something or something like that, because you're trying to have that work-life balance and taking some stuff off of your plate, I think there's just that recognition that needs to happen internally.
I think just quickly, I think that definitely having a life outside of work, and I know this is like an ongoing like discussion, just kind of about like, you know, there are some people who, you know, are a capital J journalist and, you know, work around the clock, and that seems to work for them. For the majority, is that having a life outside of your work is extremely valuable. And, you know, not, you know, for a while I'd be done with my work and I would just, you know, scroll on through TikTok for like several hours. And, you know, that definitely was not a good way to spend your free time. I think that, you know, I like to go to like the cinema, I like to, you know, hang out with my friends, I like to go, you know, hiking, or, you know, parks. I think having like, I think the best approach in my experience is, you know, I am a journalist, but I work like that's my work, like that's my work life. But I'm, you know, I'm not defined by my work. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, when we discuss like, you know, like any, we have any moral responsibilities, like what's our, you know, we have ethical responsibilities, but like in a sense of like, we also can kind of be subsumed into this theme of like, oh, I did something bad at work, therefore I'm a bad person. You know, there's, you know, degrees of like what being like, how bad you like, you know, messed up at work. But like, I think that whatever you did at work, like does not mean you're bad and therefore you were a bad person. And I think that really, having that recognition helps, I think, alleviate like burnouts over time.
I would also add, I'd love to hear what you have to say on this particular topic. But I have faced severe burnout, especially in college, when it comes to what I, you know, what my work helps save the world. And it honestly took a lot of self-reflection and learning that you need to rely on other people as well, and like building a community, because it's actually kind of like, I don't know how to say this nicer, but kind of a conceited thing to like want to your work specifically to save the world, and I feel like that's an issue in like newsrooms, because it's about the community and it's about working in like collaboration, and that's from my experience, that's the only way that like change is really effective. So I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that specifically, or if you disagree.
want to speak to you. I think with my experience that because, you know, when, you know, I had like, you know, national internships and stuff like that before, and, you know, when pitching ideas, you know, they're, you know, because there's not a lot of, there's scant coverage for like national places that don't really focus on Indian country. And so there is this like, you know, me, this impulse to be like, well, no one's covering it, so should I cover this? Because, you know, I feel like there's a sense of, you know, an obligation I need to do just because that's an area that's not really reported. And so I think for me, that definitely increased like, you know, burnout and the, you know, potential, that's like just not a good scenario to be in. And so one thing I find that's helpful, regardless if you want to work for like a national place, freelancing, or just, you know, your city's news, like a local newsroom, is I think not focusing on like how can I you know, increase awareness, or how can I better report this particular topic or subject. I think like for me, managing like source building and managing those relationships are more profound to me, because it's like I think there is something that's to be said about, you know, having, you know, someone who, you know, works in retail or whatever, and they, you know, had a really good, like, they're a part of the story, and, you know, source managing and being like, hey, do you have anything else that's safe to say? I think developing those relationships, like, will help also affect, like, the trust and perception of media, because, unfortunately, a lot of criticism that is, you know, a little bit, you know, pretty valid, is that like journalists can be extractive. Is anyone familiar with like parachute journalism? And so that's, you know, a valid critique to have. And so I think for me, I find it's much more easier to like manage these relationships with your actual sources, because those are the people that you're literally working for, than having this like more generalist like view on these, because that just gets really existential. So
yeah, I feel like, so I mean, I cover an industry that I think is, I cover ag, it's very conservative. I think there's a lot of purposeful misinformation that's spread about the impact that agriculture has on the environment. Also this idea that like farmers in America are feeding the world when they're not. They're, well, some of them are, but like for a lot of time, if you don't know, like most of our like agriculture, it goes to like corn and soybeans, and it's not for food for humans. It's often for livestock, or it's for like ethanol. So it's kind of, I get very depressed having to kind of like correct misinformation constantly, and every time I get a press release from the Farm Bureau that just, I have to report on that, seems untrue, you know? And so I think, and I just feel kind of, it's such a big industry with a lot of power. Big Ag has a lot of power. Small farmers who are doing really good practices don't have a lot of power. So I get very depressed a lot, like thinking about like, well, I report for NPR, the people who maybe have the power to change that, who are big stakeholders in the industry, are more conservative, don't probably read my publication. So I think like what keeps me motivated is like, well, at least maybe I am correcting some of this misinformation. If I can, you know, explain to the average person, you know, where their food comes from and how that actually works, then maybe that's helping a little bit. But I think what you said is true. Like, you can't go into it thinking you're going to save the world. I can't go into it thinking that I'm going to, you know, fix the agriculture industry, you know? All I can do is kind of uplift the voices of those smaller farmers.
And I think you had a question.
Hi, I'm Alice. I'm a grad student at NYU. Yeah, so my question is, because you guys mentioned a lot about kind of like
advocating for yourself, hyping yourself up. But I feel like as young journalists, especially as young women and women of color, it's like they have a lot of imposter syndrome. So like, if you have any tips on like how to deal with that?
You deserve to be here. There are really stupid people working journalism. you deserve to be as much as anyone else. And I think you have to keep telling yourself that and do your best work. And what keeps me feeling better is just that thought. Like there are white people who I'm sorry to be very candid about this, but there are white people who for example, in my newsroom, who at one point, this has changed now, were paid more than me with less experience and in a lower position. And that's really, really frustrating. And it was sort of resolved. It's not really fully resolved, but it was sort of resolved before I could bring it up. And I did, end up saying, I was going to bring it up because I noticed this. And that's why it's important to try to get into a newsroom that, will hear you out, I think it's just really important to keep telling yourself that you deserve to be here, you deserve to be paid as much as the other reporters, or not more. It's so cheesy, but if you don't believe in that, if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. So I think it's just it is really just telling yourself over and over.
I think for me, what's helpful is taking a moral inventory or sort of a assessment of what is valuable to you, principles wise. And I think for me, it's not compromising on things just because that editor really, really wants you to cover it like this. I think being firm and principled of what matters to you, because there's going to be several times so far where there is this weird conundrum of if I do it this way, then my editor will be happy, or if I do it this way, then that's, I think there's there is some weird pressure to get an angle, not speaking from my experience, but I see that okay, what is the best angle to possibly get awards. I think that there's some clear, obvious reporting that's this is blatantly trying to get an award. And so I think that for me is having a frequent check-in of what is important to you and what why is important to me, and why something happens where I'm being challenged at this, will I buckle, will I budge, or will I say that thank you so much, and being confident. I think that helps I'll go a long way, because then you if something happens and you still felt you made the right call, I think that goes miles than being applauded for something that you felt really bad that you did after, or you decided to take on this story that you just weren't comfortable doing. I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, and I just want to make clear too, this happened to me in my last job at a newspaper. My editor would treat me totally different from my older white male colleagues, and they noticed it too, but they didn't know how to handle it. But I just want to say, if you're in that kind of situation and someone is making you feel like you don't know what you're talking about or that your stories aren't valid, that is probably not the case. And you just should, I would advise getting out of that situation. Or I wish that I had done a better job of advocating for myself within the newsroom and being more clear about what I was going through, because when I did leave, people were like, wait, what's going on? Why are you leaving? We want you to stay. And I'm like, well, I've been going through this for a year now, so I'm not going to say I'm ready to just move on. But if I had decided to do something earlier and I actually wanted to hire a person, then it could have been a different situation with the results. So.
keep good receipts and bad receipts. So what I mean by good receipts is like when people tell you like a good job and whatever, like things like that, like keep that for like yourself to know, like to remind yourself like, oh, I am a good journalist. And then bad receipts when people, microaggressions, like all these things. So like just in case you need them, you might not use them for HR stuff, you might, you know, need to, it's good to have them. But it also can just help for like personally, like, you know, the things that you were saying, like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, these people did say these out-of-pocket things to me. So, like, screenshot those things and keep them for your personal use whenever things like that happen.
I think that's about all we have time for. Can we give a hand for that?